Our castaway this week is a playwright whose farces have become classics, Ben Travers. Ben, are you a gregarious man? If you had to, could you adjust yourself to loneliness?
Oh, I love to. I'm very good company for myself.
What would you be happiest to have got away from?
Well, at the present moment, I'm 88.
Yes.
My feet.
Or barefoot on hot sand, warm sand. I think you'll find them very, very much
better. It is a nice warm island, isn't it?
Very, very nice warm island. Are you fond of music? Does it mean a lot to you?
Oh, yes, yes. I love music. All kinds of music. But not musical instruments played solo, except the piano.
Yes. What was your plan in choosing them? Are you looking back?
Looking back on composers that I have enjoyed, given me pleasure, and also personal reminiscences, performers who have given me pleasure.
Yes, yes, your memories go back a long way, back to the 90s. I remember you once told me that you saw W.G. Grace score a century on the cricket
field. I did. I saw W.G. Grace pick a hundred. I saw G.L. Jessop's famous 104 at the Oval. I was quite old then. That was 1902.
And in the theatre?
In the theatre. My parents were very good. They went, nothing to do with the stage, but they were very fond of the theatre. And I saw about six or seven of the old Drury Lane pantomimes with Dan Leno and Herbert Campbell. I saw Mary Tempest in The Geisha at Daly's Theatre before the turn of the century.
Yes.
I saw William Gillette's performance of Sherlock Holmes, the original one, with Sir Charles Chaplin as the Button's boy, Billy.
Yes.
And, of course, not only the theatre, but then there were some wonderful shows, the Crystal Palace. I saw Blondin.
Well, the tightrope walker.
I saw him walk the whole length of the inside the roof of the Crystal Palace, and cook an omelette in the middle of it. He was the daddy of wire walkers. Of course, I dare say I have been greater since his time, but he was the daddy of them, just like W.G. was the daddy of cricketers, and John Roberts, daddy of billiard players. A few years later, Crippen, the daddy of murderers.
Well, what's the first record you're going to play us?
Well, Wagner died only 3 years before I was born, and I would certainly take a bit of Wagner. I'd take the prelude to Act 3 of Lohengrin.
Prelude to Act 3 of Lohengrin, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Eugen Jochum. What's your second disc, Ben?
My second on the list is, in great contrast, it's light opera, it's Radigore. And of all the performers in Gilbert and Sullivan operas, I think Martin Green, the chap who died only in February, alas, he was a friend of mine, a very nice man, but apart from that, I always thought he was the most brilliant performer of all, and my second best was Leonard Osborne. And in this little bit of Radigore, we have first Leonard Osborne, then Martin Green, and finally Margaret Mitchell. And it's a nice little piece, and I like to hear those two chaps sing again.
It now is black, it in sin, left it now is right, heart of attack. I want to be sweet and strain, you tell me so, but should it change its mind again, I let you know, I let you know.
Insane all I so
Trio from the first act of Radigore. What part of the country do you come from?
Well, I was born in Hendon and lived round about London most of my time until the First War.
What did you want to be at that time?
Either an actor or a playwright.
You had firmly made up your mind while you were still at school?
Oh, yes. Before then.
Yes. But you didn't start right away?
No, I had shots at it. I used to sit up all night writing plays and tearing them up.
Yes. What was your job?
What was it to do with the city, a wholesale provision merchant, Joseph Travers and Sons, an old family firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, when I came back, I was there for some time after Singapore, when I came back from Singapore. And
what were you doing in Singapore?
Nothing. Well, I was representing the firm.
Yeah.
But I didn't do very much. I made a few bad debts with Chinese grocers. But, no, I didn't enjoy commerce, and I was certainly not cut out for it. I was mixed up with the dried fruit market. Used to walk about the city carrying enormous bundles of samples of currants and raisins, which was with supposed to afford prospective customers who were very unwilling to buy them. So I gave most of them to the city policeman on point duty.
Very advisable. Then you went into publishing, having failed to sell your dried fruit.
I had an awful stroke of luck and got in with John Lane, Bodley Head, who was a very leading artistic publisher in those days. And I was with him for 3 years before the war. And that was a wonderful period, a great change. And
yes.
I met the most... It was a great time for English literature. H.G. Wells, Arnold Bennett, Chesterton, Saki, Anatole France... came over and I met him, extraordinary. And William Locke and your H. de Vere Stackpole, who gave you your island. And, above all, Stephen Leacock, who was a dear friend of mine.
Of course, the First World War interrupted your
publishing. Well, after 3 years of that, I had to go to the war, yes.
You went into the Royal Naval Air Service.
I did, yes.
I believe you dropped the first torpedo ever dropped from a land-based plane.
I did, yes. More my luck than good management, I did that. I also flew a triplane at one time. That was not a rather rare thing nowadays.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I had some experiences.
There's a story that you were sent up to deal with a Zeppelin with a rifle.
That was the first Zeppelin raid over London, the end of May 1915. London air defence was very sketchy at that time. Mr. Winston Churchill, who was First Lord of the Admiralty, I think, came down and inspected me, and I had a rifle. I was the gunner, you see, in this aeroplane. And we had a ceiling of 4,000 feet, and the Zepp came over at 12,000, and when it was halfway back over the North Sea, we were sent up to chase it and shoot it down with the rifle. We only got as far as Hatfield, where we had the most frightful crash.
Crashes, of course, were part of the business of flying in those days. How many crashes did you have?
8.
And you walked away from all of them?
Oh, yes. That one was rather bad. The others I all walked away from.
Well, let's have your third record, Ben. What's that to be?
Well, I always be often fond of orchestral waltzes. I think the orchestral waltz, which tops the lot, or operatic waltz, is the Rose and Cavalier one by Richard Strauss. And I think that's the one I'd pick along.
Mit mir, mir. Keule lacht mir so lang.
Waltz from Der Rosenkavalier, the Berlin State Opera Orchestra, and that excellent fine bass was Alexander Kipnis. When the armistice was signed, did you go back to publishing?
I would have liked to have, but I didn't, fortunately. John Lane had turned his concern into a limited company then, and although we made very good terms with the old boy, there wasn't room for me, so I had been married during the First War, and my wife and I went down to live in Somerset, and I started writing plays.
Yes. You wrote novels first of all.
I wrote novels, yes. Well, actually, I wrote a play first, and it was accepted. And while it was waiting for it, I wrote novels. I wrote two or three novels then.
Yes. Was your first play a success?
Well, yes, it was all right for those days, around about 7 or 8, 9 months, I think. Mm-hmm. 167 shows, I can't remember. Yes, it was very lucky about that, because in the war I'd made great friends with Lawrence Irving, who was still my great friend, and he was the son of H.B. and Dorothea Baird, the original Trilby. Well, H.B. was dead by that time, but he sent it to his mother, who gave it to Golden Bright, who at that time was the leading play agent in London, and he spotted that I'd written it for Charles Hawtrey, and sent it to Hawtrey, and blow me if Hawtrey didn't come into his office and give him 2 postdated checks for it. And eventually Hawtrey produced it with Cyril Maud and Binny Hale, mm-hmm. who was a dear friend of the family and still is. So that was my first experience in the theatre.
And then the second experience was that very successful Fast Cuckoo in the Nest.
Well, the next straight play, yes, that was at the Allwich in 1925.
Ray Flynn, Tom Walls, Robertson Hare.
Well, Robertson, yes. Mary Brough.
Yes.
And, of course, a cooker in the nest, Eva Arnault, mm-hmm. who was absolute darling, and she was in several of my plays and films.
And that was followed by Rookery Nook.
Yes.
Which has been a success all over the world, I should
say. Well,
think.
Yes, it's got one set, you see, and it's sort of jolly little story, I think.
Yeah.
And, yes, I remember in 1926 there was general strike and all the theatres were closed. Tom Waltz and Ray Flynn came down to stay with me and my wife at Burnham, and I read them the first act of Rookery Nook, and it was settled.
And that was followed by Thark.
Thark, Plunder.
Plunder is to be done at the National Theatre.
It is, yes.
I said your farces were classics now.
Well,
what's the basic principle in writing farce?
Don't be funny.
Write it seriously.
Serious, straightforward, honest-to-goodness, recognisable types of human being in dire situations. The situations are the ridiculous, the farcical side of it.
Yes.
If they must happen to straight, ordinary people. Not funny men.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure that's excellent advice. Right, record number 4, please. What's that?
I'm very fond of the piano solo, and of all pianists I've ever heard, I think Arthur Rubinstein is my favourite, but I also like the extreme contrast in piano playing, and I'd like to play, if I can, a couple of records. First, Rubinstein playing a delightful little excerpt from Schumann, which is called, in English, is called Soaring. Can we have that?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
Rubinstein playing one of the Schumann fantasy pieces, Soaring. Now, what's the other piano piece you're going to tell us about?
Well, this is, as I said, a complete contrast. But of all those American chaps, Fats Waller has always been my favorite. And I would like to have Fats Waller playing my favorite Fats Waller number. I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Fats Waller. After you'd had great success at the Old Witch with your farces, you turned most of them into films, didn't you?
Yes, rather. I did practically all of the Old Witch farces as films. And there was one mischief which Herbert Wilcox got put on for a big charity opening with Edward, Prince of Wales, as a guest of honour, and it was a tremendous success. There were lots of others who went very well.
Yes.
I think they'd be rather fun to see again. I don't know what's happened to them.
They would indeed. They'd show the most beautifully neat and deft fast-playing of a kind that doesn't really exist today. We talked about W.G. Grace early on. I know you're a great cricket enthusiast. You spent some of your royalties going to Australia to watch test matches.
I was always very fond of cricket. Mm. I've rather lost interest now, but because of this, I think it's very exciting on Sunday afternoon to watch games on the telly, but it isn't cricket. Alec Bates has said it ought to be called by another name.
You've been fascinated by the theatre since the 1890s. Have you begun to lose interest in that? What do you think of the theatre today?
I like the old-fashioned. I'm old-fashioned, quite. I'm so old. But I like action, situation, a play with a good story and good situation. But at the same time, I think the acting today is absolutely far, far superior to what there used to be. A few jolly good old stars, actors in the old days, but the sort of rank and file were far, far inferior to what we've got today.
Let's have record number 6. What's that?
All this time I was at the Old Witch and all that period, there was a great artist, a very unique artist, really, who was very beloved by everybody, particularly by myself and by Ray Flynn, who was a tremendous admirer of his, and that's Maurice Chevalier. Now, Maurice Chevalier made films, and there was a film called The Love Parade, and in that he had a song called The Love Parade, which I think is my favourite of any of his numbers. I'd like to have that.
Those are the charms with you need not be told. No other round but yours could ever hold me. Lips of Lucille and beauty of Camille, you are my dear, my love parade.
Maurice Chevalier. We've dumped you on this island. How good are you going to be at looking after yourself? Any ideas from your days in Malaysia for putting up huts?
Oh, no, I couldn't put up a hut. I can't do anything for myself. I'm very bad at my hands. I can't even change an electric light bulb without very apprehensive contortions of countenance.
Oh.
I couldn't do anything like building huts. I just lie down and hope for the best.
What are you going to eat? Done any
fruit.
Fishing? Just fruit.
Fishing?
Mm.
No.
No.
If I caught a fish, I'd be so sorry for it, I'd throw it back.
Would you try to escape, then?
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, I'll be quite happy there by myself.
It doesn't sound a very happy existence. Let's get back to records. Let's get back to number 7, which is your next one.
This is a rather remarkable record. A record of the voice of my dear old friend Tom Walls talking about his Derby win with his horse April the 5th, Derby of 1932.
I say, Tom, what about saying a few words?
Thank you very much, everybody. I'm very proud to have won the Derby. It has always been my ambition to win the blue ribbon of the turf, and fortune has smiled on me at my very first attempt. I'm very grateful for the wonderful reception you've given me. It's extraordinary how warm-hearted the racing public can be. I hope all my friends, theatrical and otherwise, have had a good win.
Bravo!
The voice of Tom Walls. And what's your last record?
Well, on the classical side of music, Tchaikovsky has always been my favourite, and I don't think I can go on the desert island without a little bit of him. And this, I think, is one of the most beautiful refrains he ever wrote. It comes from the middle of the first movement of his Fifth Symphony.
To the first movement of Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, Karajan conducting the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. If you could take just one record out of the 8 you've chosen, which would it be?
Oh, I think as I lay down to sleep under my palm tree, I'd like to be lulled off to sleep with the promise of pleasant dreams by the old Maurice Chevalier, My Love Parade.
And one luxury to take with you?
I suppose I could sneak a pipe ashore. If so, I would have an unlimited amount of my favourite tobacco. Oh, wait a moment, I might be able to make tobacco, mind I, of leaves and grass and stuff.
Yes.
Wouldn't be as good, but still. Alternatively, a pack of cards, I think. I love playing patience.
Well, I'll smuggle a few packs of cards ashore inside the tobacco case.
Yes.
And one book, apart from the Bible, Shakespeare, and big encyclopedias.
Oh, I'd have no hesitation. I'd have the complete works of Robert Browning.
Right. And thank you, Ben Travers, for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Thank you, too.
Goodbye, everyone.